Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of March 2020. Welcome to episode 58 of this podcast series, aka Social Distance Reading Journal number 1. This episode, and the next few, might be long ones. We've converted all our classes to online and distance learning where I work. And between that and the reduction of driving time and office hours and not spending time out, you know, wasting time eating lunches and going shopping, I've read a lot of comics lately. And whether they had already planned it or because of the COVID, some generous listeners have been very timely about sending me comics. Sir Iowa's Joe, Sir Luke Jackanetti of the Upstate, Derek Crabb, they were all the most recent, and some books came in via a couple of very propitiously timed sales that I attended. But more about that during the show. And the concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we did one of these episodes, which would make this pretty much the books I read during March. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. Those posts are not exactly spoilers for the podcast, since those are just lists. And here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. Godzilla's best friend on the internet, Sir Luke, wrote in. He hosts Earth Destruction Directive and co-hosts The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. And Get Back to the Wrestling. All of which are on the Two True Freaks internet radio network. Professor, I can always count on the Comics Reading Journal to be a nice mix of comics which build upon previous months and new and surprising choices. And this installment was no different. My favorites of your reads this month were the Edgar Rice Burroughs books from American Mythology. That initial Land That Time Forgot mini and the entire ERB interconnected universe in American Mythology, with Fear on Four Worlds acting as the launching pad for the other brands, has been really good. I recently read the Pellucidar Wings of Death miniseries focusing on Diane the Beautiful, uncovering a plot, a collusion, if you will, between the Wairu from Kasbak and the Mehars from Pellucidar, which gets a full recommend from me. Similarly, I just picked up the Moon Maid Catacombs of the Moon miniseries, and that is on the top of my reading pile. As always, digging the variety of comics which you cover each month. Thanks, Sir Luke. Now, I really did enjoy those Land Before Time and ERB books, and I think that the Burroughsverse really has the potential to become an interesting connected universe. But so often, those interconnected universes seem to fail. But if I do see another of those books that you mentioned at the library or otherwise for cheap, I'd definitely be interested in reading them. Both Doc Strange and Herman from Into the Weird thanked for the shout-out that I gave their show. You're welcome, gentlemen. That last episode also received social media love from Sir Iowa's Joe, Karen from Between the Pages, Dr. Ange from the Comic Box Commentary blog, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Clinton from Fan Film Friday, Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, and formerly The Office around the corner and down the hall from me, you know, when I went into the office, Bill from the Batpod, Ed Moore from Teal Productions, and our listeners of the year, Countess Ruth and Count Darren of the Sutherlands, hosts of Warlord Worlds and other awesome shows on the Rad Adventures Network. Thanks for that support, everybody. And now on to the books that I read last month, and as we do here, going to categorize the books that I read. And first, our issues I read specifically for podcast appearances, the homework books. Terminology that I'm glad to see that podcasting's Michael Bailey has begun to adopt. For Quarterbin, 151. I read Archie 101. And for the upcoming J.L. May, I read the Planet Heist story from The Return of Adam Strange 1 through 8 from 2004 and 2005. And of course, on the national holiday, March 4th, Doomsday 0.6, I picked up the book I talked about on the 6th episode of Doomspeak, Dr. Doom number 6. And for an upcoming episode of Back to the Bins, I read Magnus Robot Fighter number 31 from Gold Key. And things I read for listening to podcasts. And there are more of these than there used to be because of DCU app. And that I love following along with comic book podcasts if I have the chance. And of course, that app gives me the chance. For example, for listening along with Batman Nightcast on the Fire and Water Network, episode 25, I read Detective Comics 469 and 470. And for the Overlooked Dark Knight number 37, where the aforementioned podcasting's Michael Bailey and Andy Leyland talked about the story Blades, I followed along by reading Batman Legends of the Dark Knight 32 through 34. And speaking of podcasting's Michael Bailey, from Crisis to Crisis 231, I read Action Comics 716 and Superman Man of Steel 51, part of the Trial of Superman storyline. Not necessarily a well-remembered story, but these issues, especially that Man of Steel one, were pretty good, all things considered. And for listening along with Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower 1, and her crew, on episode 28 of the Huntress podcast, I read Direct from the 1970s, All-Star Comics number 72, the issue where Helena is inducted into the JSA, and then the team take on Rose and Thorn. Back to the Bins wrapped up their semi-regular coverage of an interesting series, and I followed along by reading JSA Strange Adventures 5 and 6. I really liked this series, a golden age adventure of the JSA, with a strong background of the pulp publishing mags of that era, name-checking some real-life folks like writer Jack Williamson. And Paul Scott and Dr. Bill did an excellent job talking about that series. And then on to new comics that we read right off the shelves. Dial H for Hero number 12. This wraps up what turns out to have been a very excellent series. There are plenty of bits of meta-narrative as this wraps up. That's, you know, sometimes that's, I know, not going to work for every reader, but I enjoyed it so much as this managed to finish up both the plot of the series with the dials and the operators and all that complex, wacky stuff, but also to wrap up the character elements, the relationship with Summer and Miguel. As we say over here on the Relatively Geeky Network that endings are hard, but Sam Humphries and the team brought this series home and landed the plane in a very satisfying way. Justice League Dark 20, this is the start of a new storyline, The Parliaments of Life, and I have higher hopes for this story than I have had for the last couple. We have problems going on with the green, the red, and the rot, and DC has done a lot over the last, what would it be, 10 years or so to develop that part of their universe, and I've enjoyed much of that. So bringing it into here, along with the avatars of those forces, I just like that setup. We have Animal Man as a new, at least temporary member of the team, and Abby Arcane has to be found. And John Constantine has a behind-the-scenes agreement with Jason Woodruff, the Floronic Man, from the Parliament of Flowers. And I'm sure that's just going to totally go fine. And from the good books that I'll turn to providers of new newsprint comics at the awesome price of $1.50, I read, well, actually, this was an even better deal. It was a $1 one-shot, The Legend of Log. Log is a little bit like Groot, a big, giant, walking piece of wood in stories that occur in a jungle setting. And he has a best friend named Bird, who is a bird. In this issue, he battles the evil warlock Darkgrim and Cora, the savage girl. So a lot of tropes and sort of standardized characters with their own spin, but a bit of a sense of humor was at work there too. So it was not a great issue, but for a new comic priced at a buck, you can't beat it. And with the hopefully temporary closure of Diamond and my LCS, I'm not quite sure when we're going to get back to the new comic reading segment in future episodes. It is certainly a strange new world. And on to the general comic reading that I did. From the kind and generous Sir Martin of Grey, I read Green Lantern 161 from 2003. I was out of the title during this era, during the Judd Winnick run, but I like the GL family and the Guardians, and this issue's theme of passing the torch fits right into how I think Green Lantern books should operate. As I regularly mention, I like sci-fi in my comics, and when it's written well, this title, this character, this wing of the DC Universe, the Green Lantern books, when they're done well, they can really scratch that sci-fi itch for me. Sir Iowa's Joe sent in some comics recently, and from that pile, I read Balder the Brave, number 3, from the four-part miniseries from 1986. It's possible I read this whole thing when it came out or shortly thereafter, but I didn't have any specific memories of this. But what this issue made me think of mostly was, wow, this was certainly an issue 3 of a 4-part series, isn't it? He also sent Judge Dredd, Blaze of Glory, a collection of both Judge Dredd stories and Damnation Station, and I really enjoyed both of those titles. The Dredd stories tended to be one-offs, while the other, Damnation Station, seemed to be a serialized story, and I enjoyed it. It was good, gritty, space-based British sci-fi. He also sent Judge Dredd Magazine 417, which had 5 stories, mostly pretty interesting. Again, it was just fun reading these British mags. And that care package from Joe also included some 2000 AD programs, and I expect I'll be getting to those next month, and I am certainly looking forward to that. And from Mr. Fan Film Friday himself, Clinton Robinson, I read Ultimate Power number 1 from 2006. The only Ultimate book that I read was Ultimate Spider-Man, and I read well over 100 issues of that. And more often than not, I enjoyed it very much. But the rest of that line, at least what I'd heard about it, just didn't really excite me much. And there were some interesting bits in this issue, but I'm not sure that I'm going to move this up on my must-read list. For one thing, the Greg Land art really doesn't work much for me. Derek William Crabb of the Fan Hole sent in a big box of comics recently, including Uncanny Avengers 23 from 2015. I didn't like the art much in here, even my Marvel girlfriend, the Scarlet Witch, but the story wasn't bad. This is in the aftermath of a Kang situation, heading into an Immortus situation. So there's stuff that they're dealing with, mostly Wonder Man being stuck inside of Rogue's mind, and it dealt with all of that stuff pretty well. And Our Man, number 1 from 1999. It's a crazy, time-jumpy story, with a bit of a sense of humor when needed, especially when that humor makes a little bit of fun of Batman. So, not a bad issue. Derek also sent Silver Surfer Black, number 3, a current Marvel title. Interesting stuff. Extremely psychedelic art. But that's reflective, I think, of the character's beginnings in the late 60s. In terms of plot, Norrin Rand makes a deal with Ego, the living planet. Each one has the power to help the other one out. Although both are so powerful, they aren't used to asking for or receiving help from anyone else. So it was a wild, fun little issue, though. And from Half Price Books, where I paid the very odd price of $1.15, I picked up Orb magazine number 3 from Canada from the mid-1970s. 68 pages of mostly black and white stories, the only exception being the 8 pages right in the middle of the book, which told the 4-color adventures of the Canadian hero, the Lone Guardian. The cover of this issue's proclaim that it will include horror, adventure, sci-fi, and fantasy. And that's a pretty accurate description of the contents. Not every story was great or even good, but every one was kind of interesting. And from the dollar boxes at World's Greatest Comics, my LCS, I ordered a reprint book from the late 70s, Dynamic Classics, number one. This one had a reprint of the great Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams, The Secret of the Waiting Graves Batman story that I read over and over and over in Batman from the 30s to the 70s. It was good to see it in color here. That was a new experience for me. And there was also a very good Goodwin and Simonson Manhunter story in that as well. I'm not sure where I got this one from. Possibly it was from a dollar bin, possibly from a generous listener. But either way, I enjoyed National Comics' Madam X from 2012. I really liked most, if not all, of these National Comics stories because Elseworld types one-shots can really be my jam. And this one with Madame Xanadu and her fortune-telling cards working with the New Orleans police going up against political and spiritual forces, a really good read. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And also, I'm not sure where I got this one from. I've lost that bit of information somewhere, but it was The Death-Defying Devil, number one, from Dynamite, from 2008. This is a modern take on the original Daredevil character from the Golden Age of comics. And it's got a good team with it. Alex Ross on the cover and art direction. Plotting it with scripter Joe Casey. Not a bad first issue, complete with the traditional trope of the hero meeting a darker version of themselves. In this case, our blue and red clad guy meets a guy in the exact same costume, but in the secondary colors of purple and green, meaning he's the bad guy. Fun, fun read. And I think I bought this next one from World's Greatest Comics, but I'm not sure about that. But that was New Gods number 6 from 1984. This was the Baxter reprint of the 70s Jack Kirby series. But this issue not just includes a reprint of that last issue, number 11, but also includes a new Jack Kirby 40-plus page story that wraps up that incomplete series, as well as setting the stage for the upcoming Hunger Dogs OGN. Interesting little era of Kirby's career, and I enjoyed this issue a lot. Dynamic Kirby layouts and figures and melodramatic action and dialogue. And it's just cool when a creator gets a chance to finish up a story, a series that was canceled just a little bit too soon. And from the 50-cent bins at Pulp Reality, I picked up Mars number 5 from First Comics from back in the day. This is a series I had just the first issue of back then, and I even covered it on a quarter bin episode once. And this one was all right. This is where the story gets a bit weird that I remember. But the art was cool, and that sets you up for the oddness of the story. If you're going to do an odd story, then odd art can work. Or if you're going to utilize odd art, you really should do that in service of an odd story. That's my thoughts. And again, this is sci-fi, and I certainly like my comics to have some sci-fi in. Now, in early March, my LCS, World's Greatest Comics in Westerville, Ohio, had its anniversary sale, which included their cheapest bins, now sadly priced at a dollar. But they were discounted to, are you all sitting down? 10 cents. The problem was that I was in North Carolina visiting my dad that weekend, but, and this is the good thing about having a 20-something kid living nearby, I gave him a fiver and instructed them to pick up, 25 or 30 comics or so. And they could keep the change. I think M ended up buying close to 40, which was awesome. Of course, some of those are going to end up in their collection. But so I'm just saying, over the next few episodes, you'll hear me go through a bunch of these dime books, including Dark Horse Presents number 2 from 1986, with a cover story featuring Concrete. Character I respect, but have only read a very few stories from. This one was very good and the clear class of the issue. The other stories featuring Mindwalk and Hellwalk Incorporated were okay. The last one was written by Jam DeMatteis and does show some of the spark and the humor that would be an important part of his work as his career developed. And Aranya, number 4, from 2005. I'm pretty sure this is the only book I've ever read featuring the character, but I was excited to see this one, and I've got a feeling this is why M picked it out. Because we have a soft spot for the character, because she was in the Spider-Man Unlimited iOS game, which I loved, M loved, and I thought she had a great costume. So that was a fun read, and I wouldn't mind reading more books with her. And Lone Wolf and Cub 2100, number 4 of 4. This was not by the character's creator, Koiko Kazume, but it does hit a couple of the key bits, and from what I can tell, it sort of has the overall vibe of the original. And I like the futuristic setting. I think that was portrayed very well. Certainly not going to say it's as good or as classic as the original by any means, but this is a nice bite-sized story set broadly and generally in that world. And Outsiders 22 with Geo-Force, Katana, and Looker, and the team teaming up with Orion and Light Ray to battle Darkseid. Some interesting ideas in here, not a bad issue. And Star Trek Deep Space Nine 2 and 3 from the Marvel Paramount run from 1996. Always have to start with the likenesses, and they were pretty good. But also pretty good stories that seemed to fit into the DS9 universe and also contain some ongoing serialized aspects within the comic book, which of course is fitting for a comic based on DS9. I think if you leave an element like that out from a DS9 adaptation, you're not really doing Deep Space Nine properly. And ElfQuest, The Discovery 1 and 2, a DC miniseries from 2006. I read a huge run of ElfQuest back when I was just getting back into comics, around this time actually, 2006, 2008. But I had not read this series before and was so glad that M nabbed these ones. The key is that one of the young members of Cutter's tribe has fallen for a member of the Water Elf tribe, and the Tree Elves and the Water Elves plain don't like each other. It's a good start to an intriguing miniseries. And Death or Glory, number 1, a Rick Remender book from 2018. A woman finds herself in a bad way with a father who is in a very bad way himself. And she figures that all of their problems could be solved if they had just a little bit of money. And then she decides to go out and get themselves a little bit of money. And she also gets herself a whole lot of trouble. Good start, again, to a very interesting series. Definitely impressed. And it was like 40 pages long. Did I mention that M nabbed it for just a dime? Because, yeah. And Pretty Deadly, number 6, a series I've heard good things about. I think it was maybe the serialized nature of the story, but I was very, very lost. But it was a cool concept with death and reapers and all of that. I just didn't know who the characters were. But I don't think that was Kelly Sue DeConnick's fault. I think it was my fault for reading issue 6 as my first issue, my introduction to the title. So I blame myself. And then the last one of this pile for this month, I'm not totally sure what this one's called, but I think it's Dark Horse Presents Serenity, Firefly, Class 03-K64, number 1, or I don't know, something like that. Start of an interesting story. And for the purposes of this episode and the timing of this recording, I will merely point out that a major plot point was the crew of the Serenity smuggling toilet paper. That's all I'm going to say about that issue. And some kids' books that I read, mostly from Sir Rob's care package, but also from Carolina Comics and more, and others. I read Archie's Joke Book, 256 and 284, Walt Disney's Goofy Adventures, number 9, Andy Panda, number 1, Tim and Jerry, 277, Archie, 352, Sad Sack and the Sarge, 97, 128, and 139. You're welcome, Shag. And Hot Stuff, 167. I'm not really a fan of Hot Stuff, but that issue wasn't bad, all things considered, and Sad Sack is consistently one of the funniest of the Harvey humor books. I do have to give a shout out to Goofy Adventures number 9, which had Goofy as a James Bond-like character. And that story was quite entertaining as well. All right, time to take a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about the graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read in March.
In 1975, Jaws was released. It is routinely regarded as one of the greatest films of all time and is generally credited with creating the concept of the summer blockbuster. In 1978, in an obvious cash grab, Jaws 2 was released, failing to have lightning strike a second time, but presenting a generally enjoyable film. In 1983, Jaws 3D was released, shamelessly attempting to take advantage of a gullible audience. By 1987, there was no pretense of quality as Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine cashed paychecks for sleepwalking through a pointless and incredulous sequel. In 2016, Paul Spitero created Is It Jaws, in which he and a group of rotating guest hosts discuss new and old movies and place them up against the Jaws scale, which ignores some elements of the actual films and sets forth a rating scale. Jaws, an all-time great classic film. Jaws 2, an enjoyable film with some flaws but worthy of multiple viewings. Jaws 3, a moderately enjoyable film. And finally, Jaws 4, a bad movie. Please join Paul and his guests as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month. And to balance off all the Tarzan and Conan and similar books that I've read the last few months, I decided to read a batch featuring my truly favorite barbarian character. From the epic line of Marvel Comics, I read Gru the Wanderer 25 through 27 and 33 through 36. Our good friend Clinton Robinson sent me some of these, and I got the other ones at the World's Greatest Comics 3 for a dollar sale. These books had one of my favorite all-time running jokes in them that I saw a couple of times in these stories. For example, in Gru 26, Gru is told by a witch woman that he is slow of mind. And then, 4 pages later, after some time has passed for the Wanderer, he thinks, what did she mean, slow of mind? That was a joke with perfect timing. Good one. And from Dr. Anthony the Engineer, and then from Hoopla, I read Adam Wreck 1 through 3 from Alterna. We have a married couple and their only son, space explorers, and the son, Adam, is a bit whiny, kind of bored up in the emptiness of space. Any listener who has a child home from school on quarantine will understand this. But in this case, space pirates show up, and that's when things get crazy, and Adam and his family have a crazy, wild, entertaining space adventure. It was a good read and a very good use of the newsprint in that this was basically a three-color book, black and white and orange tones. And by not trying to do too much, by knowing the limitations of the media that your story is going to be presented in, I think creator Michael Bracco ended up delivering a solid and pretty young adult sci-fi space story. Dr. Anthony also sent the first trade of a series written by Chuck Dixon and drawn by Butch Geis. So if you think Winter World 1 through 4 is going to be a pretty good story, you'd be pretty right. We're in a post-apocalyptic civilization as Earth has gone back into an ice age. We have the team of Scully and Wynn traveling across the brutal landscape looking for Wynn's parents. They manage to actually find a tropical area that survives based on the weather pattern La Niña. But Wynn, who is a young adult lady person, by the way, may become a sacrifice to keep the weather good. This was an interesting world, a load of bizarre situations, but good, relatable characters, and overall a good story. I liked it. Sir Luke Giaconetti and I are both sports fans, but our fandoms conflict with one another. So whether it's college football or English football, our favorite squads often go up against each other. And when they do, comic books are on the line. And last month, after my mighty Arsenal defeated the, let's go with less mighty, West Ham United, Luke sent me some comics to pay off his gambling debt, including the very recent Ghost Rider 1 and 2. Johnny Blaze found himself in charge of hell, and when some damned souls escape, he goes after them. That doesn't happen on his watch. And Danny Ketch isn't all that wild about Johnny's methods in retrieving these bad dudes, so we do get a Ghost Rider versus Ghost Rider showdown in issue 2, and that was pretty epic. I enjoyed this one a lot, as for one thing, it did try to make a little sense of the Marvel cosmology as it deals with hell and demons and damned souls and all of that stuff. Luke also sent the recent 100-pager From Beyond the Unknown, Giant Number 1. This one had Adam Strange on the cover, and that's always good. That issue was a reprint from DC Comics Presents Number 3, and this one also had a terrific Alan Moore reprint of a Cat Matui Green Lantern story. It was a Batman Metal Men team-up that was reprinted. But also, this had three pretty solid news stories. In the lead, Hal Jordan is finally called out by the Guardians for spending too much time on Earth, which is just one little bitty planet, and not enough time in the rest of his space sector. We also get a modern Commandy story, and a nice little Legion story featuring Dawn Star. Good stuff. From the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality, I picked up Convergence, Justice League 1 and 2. I didn't read the event book for Convergence, and that didn't interest me at all. But I really enjoyed this event, because M and I ended up picking up a bunch of the two-part minis, and we mostly enjoyed them. This one was another one that was pretty fun. You have the ladies of the Justice League, so it's Mira, Zatanna, Supergirl, Jade, Jesse Quick, who is about to have a baby, by the way. Like, she's in the hospital actually having the baby. And they have to go up against the dark version of Flashpoint Aquaman. So there's some Aquaman mirror scenes that get pretty intense. And, you know, maybe the ending wasn't the greatest, but it was a pretty fun, fine little Elseworlds-type story. And from the 3 for a buck boxes and Carolina Comics and more, I read my first ever Impact Comics books because I found a little run and read Crucible 1 through 4. This focused mostly on the character of the Black Hood, but also included the Shield and the Comet. And there was an evil organization who can see a little bit of future happenings and try to adjust those activities to make some of those future things happen and try to avoid the future where some other things happen. And as you know from reading comic books, whenever a secret organization tries to control future events, it does not go well for them. And that's what happens in this series as well. So I enjoyed it. I have a bunch of disconnected issues from Impact, and I think I may dig out some of those sometime this year. Again, these issues weren't great, but they did make me want to read more from the line, so that certainly counts as a success. I talked about Derek William Crabb's care package before. Derek is, of course, from the Fanholes podcast, and he sent a bunch of old Legion of Superheroes stories from the late 1960s. And I got to the end of that pile, reading Adventure Comics 374, 375, and 378. The pack included a few goofy bits, of course, but also some pretty good drama and action. We're getting more consistently into, you know, more serious stories at this part of Legion history. Some real villains, including the Fatal Five. And of course, remember, this was Derek. So he also sent part of a bold new era, Transformers 12 and Transformers Galaxies number 1. Because Derek. I did not get a lot of the backstory of what was going on here that I'm sure was there in both of these issues, but the character interactions could be interesting at times, and the war scenes, the battle bits, they were intense and interesting. You know, we've talked about before here at Relatively Geeky that not every story is meant for every media, and at least different media have different strengths and weaknesses. And I don't know that comic books are the best way, the best medium, for telling Transformers stories, because the key moments in the stories, the actual transformations, are best presented in media that can show movement. So most notable for Transformers fans, that's been animation and motion pictures. It's just that seeing before and after, or even before and middle and after of the transformations, I felt like something was missing there. Now, on the last day that I went to campus to get materials I'd need to convert my classes to digital and distance and online, I hit the 50-cent boxes at Pulp Reality. I felt it important to patronize that store since I wouldn't be back to that town for at least a few months. So I picked up a couple of books from the teeny tiny Dagger comics from 1994, Mavericks 1 and 2. This is not all that bad, although the colors are a bit garish, especially in issue 1. But I actually liked a few of the characters in this hero team, especially the Australian guy. I think Crocodile Dundee wannabe. But for a semi-pro book, the quality is pretty decent. Little things like the coloring and lettering, as well as the technical aspects of characterization and the overall story, are all above average, you know, for a comic at this level, if you know what I mean. I also got Speed Racer 22 through 24 from Now Comics from 1989. This was a weird series, as they involve Speed and the crew in a cross-country rally race. One issue took place in Atlanta, for example, another in Chicago. Now, that's not the weird part. The weird part is that both of these issues involve scenes at, in one case, Dragon Con, and another case, Chicago Comic Con. Because in the world of Speed Racer comic books published by Now Comics, Speed Racer has a comic book published by Now Comics. So, in the issues, as he tours the country driving, he also visits Comic Cons and signs his comics. It's weird. And with one exception, they did what seemed to be a pretty good job of getting about geographic and cultural aspects of the cities correct, or at least give many shout-outs to streets and locations that seemed reasonable. But there is one huge mistake in the Chicago issue. There's a little funny scene about Speed asking Trixie out to dinner and then taking her to eat a couple slices of pizza in his car. The problem is, this is clearly not Chicago-style thick crust pizza. These are skinny, floppy slices. And that actually did bump me a bit. It was sort of a case of, guys, you were doing so well. But actually, overall, it was a pretty fun read. Now, when the libraries around here announced that they were closing for a number of weeks, I only learned about that about 2 hours beforehand. So I rushed out to my nearest branch. If I'd had more notice, I would have hit a few more, and nabbed off the shelves 5 audiobooks and 6 graphic novels or comic collections, including The Legend of Wonder Woman 1 through 9, which was a digital first retelling of the origin of Diana by Renee DeLiz and Ray Dillon. This is an out-of-continuity story, I imagine designed for non-comics readers. And I'm one who doesn't mind out-of-continuity stories at all, whether they conflict or agree with prior versions. I can take each one on its own, although I do recognize that they're playing off of earlier versions. So if you know those earlier stories, you may get a little more out of this in terms of recognizing where the changes are. But anyway, I like this one, and it spent a lot of time on Themyscira before Steve Trevor comes and brings knowledge of the outside world to the Amazons. Then we get the tournament. We get Wonder Woman as a warrior for peace, as well as origins for the lasso, the stars and stripes in the outfit, the eagle breastplate, a lot of the lore. And we had a lot of Eddie Candy in these issues, and that may or may not work for anyone. She can be an acquired taste, I understand. But overall, I enjoyed the series, solid stuff, and I liked the physical take on Wonder Woman here. She is large, similar height and overall proportions to Big Barda, which is wholly appropriate. And she is colored a little darker than Steve and Etta. Again, appropriate or that makes sense given her Mediterranean background. So it's little details like that are things that I like. I also grabbed off the shelves a Spidey trade, albeit not a Peter Parker trade. This included The Clone Conspiracy Omega 1 and Ben Reilly, The Scarlet Spider 1-5. And I've never read much of the original Clone Saga or even many books featuring Ben Reilly, so this is largely new ground for me. I do like that this version of Ben is quite different from Peter Parker. For one thing, he's kind of a really big jerk. And just on that basis, I like that we're not just rehashing similar character traits with a guy with a different name. But that is about all that I can say nice about these issues. The plot involves a sick child, a casino owner, and a big old ugly bodyguard. Oh, and there's another Peter clone, maybe even another Peter clone after that, and has a few things to say how Ben is going about his business. So, not my favorite series of the month. I'll just put it that way. I visited my dad in North Carolina during part of my spring break, and whenever I do that, I take a showcase with me. And in this case, it was the Great Disaster volume featuring the Atomic Knights. So I read a bunch of Atomic Knight stories, which were partial reprints of Strange Adventure issues, but I also read First Issue Number 1, The Story of Atlas, by Jack Kirby. An interesting take on the strongman motif. So next up in that trade is the Hercules Unbound issues. I didn't get to those on this trip, but maybe later in the summer when we're clear to travel again. On Hoopla, I finished up a series that I started last month, The Fade Out, 2-12, by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. This is a grim and gritty old Hollywood murder story, but it goes far beyond that, to be honest. At times, it's a bit too grim and gritty for me, for my sensitive tastes, a bit too hard case crime. But the story is so good, the plotting so clever, the twists and turns of the mystery so engaging, the character so interesting, that I was able to look past the grim and gritty and enjoy the mystery and enjoy the overall story. And I certainly can't deny the high quality of this. It's very, very good, the words and pictures. Also on Hoopla, I found a bunch of trades from Zenoscope featuring a character that Sir Iwas Joe sent me a few issues of. And I started with the character's origin last month, and then I moved on to the next trade, which is Robin Hood, Wanted 1-5, which picked up right exactly where that last series left off. We learn more of her background, which might tie into the realm of Nottingham and the magics of that world, much more than we believed. Robin was certainly raised on Earth, we know that, but maybe she's not from our Earth. But that doesn't keep the police authorities of our Earth from searching for her for actual legitimate crimes that she really did commit. And so, when an offer comes for her to return to the land where she's considered a deliverer and a hero, of course Robin jumps at it. Good series, lots of Arthurian references, mostly delivered in clever ways, while also maintaining this pretty dark backstory for our heroine. So I enjoyed it. Now, my favorite part is that given the reputation that Zenoscope has, certainly in terms of its cheesecakey covers, Robin made one hilarious comment, when someone from the other dimension tracked her down on Earth and they were like bargaining, you know, negotiating the terms of her return, Robin says she needs to track down the seamstress because last time she was there, the woman obviously thought she wanted half of her body uncovered for some dumb reason. I LOL'd at that. Out loud, even. I also picked up the next few digital trades of Suicide Risk, covering issues 14 to 21. Every trade of this sci-fi series is different than the one before, different viewpoints on this world, where superpowers can be bought on the streets if you have the right connections. At this point, our previous lead character, Officer Leo Winters, is dead, or at least seems that way. And then we get issues in sort of dreamscapes, maybe involving different realms of consciousness. It gets a little wacky at that point. And we learn way more about this world than we've ever known before. And we learn about the aliens, the ones whose power implements were stolen to create the heroes and villains. They figure out what's been going on Earth and arrive for a showdown. And that's when we get back to the superheroics and superpowers and the fighty-fighty. Excellent battle scenes, pretty intricate plotting, where actions have consequences and life is presented as being a bit more complicated than it seems in many other comic books. It's an interesting series. I really like Mike Carey as a writer, and I'm looking forward to wrapping this one up next month. And I think that's everything. You know, looking at the recording, I don't think this was too crazy long an episode, though I make no promises for April. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, I enjoyed that 100-pager, the From Beyond the Unknown, and also that Silver Surfer Black issue. The fade-out was very good. I really dug Planet Heist, and of course, Gru the Wanderer is wonderful. But in terms of what I thought was my favorite, I really try to not do this every month, and sadly, I won't be able to for the next few months. But Doctor Doom number 6, the Doctor Doom and Kang go on a road trip issue, definitely my favorite read of March. Next month, I'm planning to wrap up Suicide Risk, like I said, and I have some library trades to work through, including a recent Thor volume. As I said, Sir Iowa Joe sent some 2000 AD issues I put near the top of the list. But other than that, I don't really know what I'll read, except that it will probably be a whole lot of comic books. And whatever comics I do end up reading, I'll be here to talk about the books I read in April, and that episode ought to be out sometime in early May. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of these books that I've mentioned, especially if you've ever read any of them. You can send that feedback via email, WereRelativelyGeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. Of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.